This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Actually, what we currently see is the continuation of politics with military means. But sooner or later, one side will win or both sides will be too exhausted to continue fighting. And then there is the right time for a new political initiative.
That's Wolfgang Potsdam, a former Austrian defense attaché in Libya and Tunisia, talking about the military standoff in Libya. Details coming up also. Suspected separatists attacked and burned aid meant for people in the troubled English-speaking regions in Cameroon. And Ethiopia observes a national day of mourning today following the deaths of top officials in an apparent coup attempt. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, humanitarian aid workers in Cameroon say they are scared after several consignments of aid meant for people in the troubled English-speaking regions were attacked and burned by suspected separatists. The rebels say they will never accept any assistance brought in by the military, which the government of Cameroon insists is only escorting the convoys to protect aid workers. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
In a social media video, suspected rebels armed with guns and machetes set fire to shipments of food, bedding and medicine. At least six similar videos circulated online in the past week showing armed men destroy aid seized on its way to the country's English-speaking regions. Cameroonian rebels on social media claim responsibility for the attacks. In one video, the attackers say they will never allow what they call poisoned humanitarian aid from Cameroon's President Paul Biya. Christian Eselekwe Tanyi is with the Martin Luther Jr. King Memorial Foundation Cameroon, LUCMEF, one of the aid groups whose shipment was destroyed.
More and more, we see humanitarian actors being attacked or being threatened or misrepresented as either working against the state or working with the state. They'd work to relieve the suffering of the population. They do not side with any party to the conflict. They respect at all times the principle of neutrality and impartiality.
For Peter Shea is with Cameroon Rights Watch. He says the attacks on aid workers increased after April 14, when the government sent 55 truckloads of assistance with a military escort and troops to distribute it.
When you look at the atrocities that are being meted out to the population in these areas, the military is the prime suspect. The burning of the houses, they say it is the handiwork of the military. And many people in these areas believe the government is not doing enough to call for dialogue, which people think can be a headway to solving this problem.
Cameroon's Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji says the military will continue to protect aid convoys and the population.
The President of the Republic instructed us to intensify the distribution of humanitarian aid, to put in place mechanisms so that the locally affected population can put in place strategies to be self-reliant.
But it's not only Cameroon's military who are being attacked. Last week, the government said rebels killed four policemen and wounded six others who were transporting aid to the southwestern town of Eyumodjock. Aid workers could not confirm the number of recent attacks or quantity of items destroyed, but said it was huge and could only bring more suffering to the English-speaking population. Teacher Valentine Mulu in Yaoundé says his 76-year-old father in the northwest town of Kom relies on medical aid to treat his diabetes. The recent attacks on aid convoys have prevented his father from getting treatment, he says.
We are actually very worried because his diabetes is at an acute stage. We have not been able to get his treatment for 2 weeks now. The nurses say his situation is getting very preoccupying.
Cameroon authorities have accused international aid groups of exaggerating the conflict in the country's two English-speaking regions to scorn its efforts. The government says there are 152,000 internally displaced in the two English-speaking regions, and two-thirds are receiving aid. The United Nations says at least 1,800 people have been killed and more than 500,000 displaced since 2017, when Anglophone rebels began fighting for independence, citing second-class treatment from Cameroon's French-speaking majority. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
As Ethiopia observed a national day of mourning today following an apparent coup attempt in one of its regions, questions remain about the alleged mastermind of the attack and his motives. State media announced yesterday that Brigadier General Asamino Sige was captured and killed. Asamino had a strong following among the Amara ethnic group and had been serving as head of the Peace and Security Bureau of the Amara region in the country's north. He is accused of plotting attacks that killed the president of Amara State and other officials. Ethiopia's army chief of staff was also killed by his bodyguard in Addis Ababa, 500 kilometers away. The Associated Press reported that the military arrested 182 people yesterday, including four high-ranking officials in the Amara region. In an interview with VOA, Ethiopian journalist Zakaria Zalalem said the general's motives are murky. He says taking over the regional capital would not guarantee any sort of control of the region because there are federal army bases in the region. A civil war is raging around the Libyan capital without a clear winner on the horizon. Various conflict resolution efforts have failed to lead to stabilization of Libya 4 years after the signing of the Libyan political agreement. Wolfgang Potsai, security and policy advisor at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about what is needed to stabilize Libya and who could lead such an effort.
Actually, what we currently see is the continuation of politics with military means. But sooner or later, one side will win or both sides will be too exhausted to continue fighting. And then there is the right time for a new political initiative. This initiative should start with a national conference of the elected and therefore legitimated local representatives and the tribal elders. This should not be a conference of people selected by the UN, SRSG or by someone else. The leadership of the conference must rest with the Libyans. Most Libyans are not willing to accept any solution dictated from outside. Maybe the oldest Libyan, tribal elder or the crown prince could chair such a conference, but it needs to be a Libyan. The aim of this conference is to agree on an interim constitution. Such an interim constitution should be preferably of a decentralized form of state in order to have a proper foundation for the stabilization phase. This could be the amended old constitution from 1951. Amended means there should be also a formula for the sharing of the oil revenue. The current parliament, the House of Representatives and the High Council of State, established by the UNLPA, could act for the time being as the two chambers of the parliament as foreseen in the old constitution, so they would have for a specific time a role. But key is for the whole process that the outcome needs to be a real Libyan solution owned by the Libyans.
France and Italy failed so far to agree on what to do to help Libyans reach a political solution. On the other hand, regional Arab players and Turkey backed opposite sides in Libya, while the U.S. showed very little interest, if any, in getting involved. Who could shape and coordinate such a new strategy?
Well, I would say there is no alternative to the United Nations. The United Nations is the only one who could facilitate such a process. The UN Special Representative should have his main effort in the preparation of such a national conference. He should have a shuttle diplomacy to find a common ground for such an interim constitution. Conference should only take place if there is already a common ground. The European Union, in particular the leading European Union countries like Germany, France and Italy, need to support the United Nations. In particular, Germany has currently a particular role as a key country of the European Union and is a non-permanent member of the UN Security Council, and they should use this role. The UN should support with all its instruments of power, the political instrument to coordinate the shuttle diplomacy to work on the warring factions in the sense I've mentioned before. They should work on economic incentives. Not the whole of Libya is a mess, and there should be incentives for the others, while seeing that those who stabilize the areas, that they have benefits from peace and stability in their region. The UN should support on the informational side by providing know-how for state building, and the EU has to offer a lot. And they should support the training of the military, not only border security, but also counterterrorism and police forces.
But where is the incentive for the warring rivals while fighting is continuing around the Libyan capital?
As long as the parties are not exhausted, or as long as one side did not win decisively and take Tripoli or defeat the LNA, I don't see a real chance for political initiative. I know that in the background there are negotiations going on, looking for a possibility to facilitate a ceasefire. But again, as long as both parties are not exhausted enough, and as long as both parties still believe that they are able to win to defeat the others, I don't see a chance for a real lasting ceasefire.
That was Wolfgang Putzai, policy advisor at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Suspected separatists attacked and burned aid meant for people in the troubled English-speaking regions of Cameroon. Ethiopia observes a national day of mourning today following the death of top officials in an apparent coup attempt. And a civil war is raging around the Libyan capital Tripoli without a clear winner on the horizon. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The United Nations Refugee Agency reports around 7,500 Congolese refugees have fled to Uganda this month to escape escalating inter-ethnic violence. Officials are screening them closely, not only for wounds and injuries, but for any who might be carrying the deadly Ebola virus. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
UNHCR reports that Congolese refugees are crossing into Uganda at the rate of about 300 a day, more than twice as many as in May. Most are fleeing across Lake Albert from Ituri province, where renewed clashes between the Hema and Lendu groups have displaced a massive 300,000 people this month. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahechich says refugees arriving in Uganda speak of escaping vicious and extreme brutality in their homeland.
Armed groups are said to be attacking villages, torching and looting houses, and killing men, women and children. Some refugees are arriving with significant belongings, fearing that may not be able to return to their homes. Others who have fled imminent danger have little more than the clothes on their backs. Nearly two-thirds are children, i.e. they are below the age of 18.
Mahechich says Ugandan transit and reception facilities are overwhelmed by this huge influx of refugees. He says all those who arrive undergo a health screening. He says many of the refugees need medical care for wounds and injuries they may have received while fleeing violence. He tells VOA they also are screened for the Ebola virus. Ituri, along with North Kivu province in the northeastern DRC, is in the midst of a devastating Ebola epidemic.
The screening is in place, obviously, at the points where the refugees are crossing in order to check their condition and to obviously identify those who might be potentially infected by the virus. We have had no such cases.
Mehechit says shelter and basic relief items are urgently needed. He says many refugees also need immediate psychosocial counseling to help them deal with their traumatic experiences. Unfortunately, he says humanitarian agencies are unable to provide the needed assistance because they are broke. He says the international community has donated only 17% of the $150 million UN appeal for refugee aid in Uganda. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Yesterday, Zimbabwe's government banned the use of foreign currencies inside the country. The move is seen as an effort to support the recently reintroduced Zimbabwean currency and contain inflation. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from the resort town of Victoria Falls, some Zimbabweans think a move back to local currency might be premature.
On Monday, Zimbabwe's Minister of Finance announced a ban on the use of foreign currency to conduct transactions inside the country. Addressing journalists Tuesday at the end of a United Nations and Africa Union summit on wildlife, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said the move was necessary.
Zimbabwe has gone back to normalcy. And the normalcy is a country must have its own currency. That's normalcy. We were living in an abnormal situation, and you should be the first to congratulate us for becoming normal again.
The government has not banned the possession of foreign currency, he said. It only wants people to exchange it for the national currency, known as bond notes, before conducting any transactions.
If one buys your tea and they have your American dollar, your euro, Bloomberg, American dollar. Then you must go to Europe to change. You change there and go and have a coffee. That's what is there. That's what is normal.
In 2009, Zimbabwe abandoned its own dollar after severe hyperinflation made it worthless. Since then, people have used multiple currencies to conduct everyday business, with the US dollar and South African rand being the most common. On Monday, the country's finance minister said Zimbabwe would now only allow the use of bond notes, which the country introduced about 2 years ago as part of efforts to ease shortages of cash. Kojo Bentum Williams, a travel writer from Ghana, was in Victoria Falls when the Minister of Finance spoke. He says there has been confusion since the currency changed.
There was a lot of communication going on, a bit misleading, you know, suggesting that you cannot use your credit card, you know, because of the new change. But the systems are still running. I use my credit card here. It's working. So there need to be a lot of education to let people understand what is it, what has changed.
The opposition movement for democratic change has condemned the ban on using foreign currency. So did a number of civic organizations. Tabani Moyo is the spokesman of the NGO Crisis Coalition in Zimbabwe.
This was hurried. It was done without public consultation, stakeholder consultations. It has sent shockwaves into the national economy, and we are likely to see a wave of price increases. In our view, this country needs a long-term plan that will leapfrog the country into orbits of development.
Specifically, Moyo says the country needs to produce goods to sell abroad.
We are not earning our upkeep, hence the need to revive the production sector so that we earn forex through exports. So it is not a currency crisis as they are prescribing. It is a production crisis, it's a political legitimacy crisis which must be cured.
President Mnangagwa stands fully behind the currency switch.
In this transition, there will be a lot of confusion. But it's so clear that we shall continue to have either workshops or pronouncements on the radio and so on as to what actually we are doing. So that's what we're doing.
Thank you.
The most critical point is, are we doing the right thing or not the right thing? We believe we're doing the right thing.
In recent weeks, the bond notes have been losing value against other currencies. It's far from clear if it will stabilize and help Zimbabwe's rapidly declining economy. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe.
Five black rhinos donated by a zoo in the Czech Republic have arrived in Rwanda after a 35-hour trip in an effort to increase the population of the endangered animals. Several conservationists have saluted the largest ever translocation of rhinos from Europe to Africa. Eugene Uimana has details from Kigali.
That's not the sound of those black rhinos, because they are very quiet. It is the sound of cameras recording the unforgettable arrival of Jasili, Jasmina, Mani, Almoti, and Mandela. Ranging in age from 2 to 9 years, they include 3 females and 2 males. For conservationists, this is a great action toward keeping this rare species alive on the continent. This is Jesse Graner.
We wouldn't bring the rhinos if we didn't think they would be doing well here, or that their welfare would be better. The zoos have done a fantastic job. It's actually a safari park. They've had big areas to move there, but they're breeding them incredibly well. So it gives us an opportunity, because this is a rare species, to actually return some back to the wild.
The rhinos were in carefully built crates. A team of about 3 people took care of them throughout the journey. Eugene Mutangana, who works with Rwanda Development Board, says their presence is aimed at increasing the number of tourists. Today we have annually 50,000 tourists who frequently visit the Akadila National Park. That is due to these rare species we are bringing here. On arrival at Kigali International Airport, the rhinos were immediately put on 3 trucks that drove them to Akadila, east of the capital Kigali. Statistics show that the rhino population is declining, with only 900 in the world. Tourism is the top source of Rwanda's development, bringing in $444 million annually. The country has a target of raising that to $800 million by 2024. Eugene Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chang, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, how long can a head of state maintain effective leadership? Some African leaders are forced out of office, while others respect the political process. The politics of transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.